Dr. Richard Swenson, author of The Overload Syndrome and Margin, writes that we must have room to breathe. We need freedom to think and permission to heal. Our relationships are being starved to death by velocity. Hi, I'm Rob West. These days, too many of us are physically, emotionally, mentally, and financially overloaded. So we'll look at rest from a biblical perspective today. Then we have lots of great listener questions ahead, but we won't be taking your live calls today because this program is pre-recorded. This is Faith and Finance on American Family Radio. Biblical wisdom for your financial decisions. Well, the room to breathe that Dr. Swenson writes about is called margin. It's taking a break before you break, so to speak. For many people, there just isn't enough time or money or energy left at the end of the day to recuperate, and then everything starts again at full throttle the next day. Unfortunately, a no-margin lifestyle can have serious physical and financial consequences. Let's take sleep, for example. According to the Sleep Foundation, nearly half of people in the U.S. have trouble sleeping, and around one-third of adults sleep less than 7 hours each night. Chronic sleep deprivation can lead to expensive health problems, including diabetes, anxiety, obesity, and heart disease. Studies show that lack of sleep deeply affects our emotional health, relationships, and decision-making, reminding us that rest isn't a luxury, but a necessary part of living wisely and well. Perhaps you find things moving too fast in your life. Working late nights and weekends might seem necessary, but burning the candle at both ends is ultimately unproductive. You'll find that exhaustion leaves no energy for the most important things, your relationships with others and with the Lord. Now, don't get me wrong, God calls us to work for our families, for His kingdom, and for the community. We work to pay the bills, to give, to save, and to invest. It's part of how God made us. But work isn't all there is. We need to rest sometimes, too. You know, rest is God's idea just as much as work is. On the seventh day of creation, God rested, not because He was tired, but because His work was completed. God blessed that rest and called it holy. Later on, keeping the Sabbath holy was enshrined as one of the Ten Commandments. Like author Rich Villadas puts it, God gives us Sabbath, He gives us rest, as a gift to remind us that our standing in Christ is not based on our works. Days of rest are days where we can tell ourselves, I'm not producing anything, yet God still loves me. Technology makes it easy to work from anywhere at any time, but just because we can doesn't mean we should. Margin in work means getting enough rest so that you can do your job as unto the Lord, with purpose and energy. Staying late at the office or skipping vacation days might make you look like a go-getter, but stress and broken relationships are a high price to pay for professional progress. Now, perhaps I need to point out that there's a difference between getting proper rest and being lazy. Laziness is choosing not to do what you're supposed to do, or only doing the minimum to get by. In his first letter to the Thessalonians, Paul tells the church to warn those who are idle and disruptive. The suggestion here is that being inactive can lead to mischief. You've probably heard the saying, idle hands are the devil's workshop. We can see this effect all over our culture. Scripture warns against idleness masked as busyness in 2 Thessalonians 3. Without rest, our constant activity can become aimless distraction rather than faithful work, draining our purpose and clouding our calling. Proverbs 31 describes the noble woman as hardworking, caring for her home, business, and the poor. Verse 27 says she does not eat the bread of idleness, showing that fruitful labor honors God, while idleness ultimately leads us into trouble. Laziness can sometimes look like spending more time on distractions, like scrolling or shopping, than on what matters most, like caring for our homes, our relationships, or the work God entrusts to us. Proverbs 24, 30 and 31 paints the picture of a neglected field, overgrown and crumbling from despair. If you wrestle with laziness, don't run from it, bring it to Jesus. He offers not only forgiveness, but strength to live faithfully and diligently in every area of life. The good news is that God's grace meets us right where we are. Whether we're burned out from overworking or stuck in patterns of procrastination, He invites us into rhythms of grace, not guilt. Rest isn't something we earn, it's something we receive. So if you're weary, come to Jesus. His yoke is easy, his burden is light, and in him, you'll find true rest for your soul. As I said, we're off today, so don't call in, but we've got some great calls lined up in advance, so we'll go to those just around the corner. I'm Rob West, and we'll be right back.
For your walk with Jesus, I'm David Wolin with Haven Today, inviting you to anchor your day in God's Word.
Has a spouse or a family member done something recently to help you? A wife for a husband or a husband for a wife? If that kind of event is not common, it might catch you by surprise. But we feel loved when others anticipate a need and meet it. And if that's true in human relationships, how much more should we feel loved by the God who said through Isaiah chapter 65, verse 24, "Before they call, I will answer. While they are still speaking, I will hear." What an incredible word. Before you even ask, the Lord promises to respond. He's not ignorant of our needs, and he is able to respond before we even think to ask. You'll get more daily encouragement from God's Word with Anchor Devotional. Try it out at getanchor.com.
Faith and Finance is grateful for support from Sound Mind Investing. If you have money in an investment account, you know sometimes the stock market can seem like a roller coaster. But it's possible to enjoy both profit and peace of mind as a do-it-yourself investor, no matter what's happening in the market. A short video webinar about that is available at soundmindinvesting.org. Financial wisdom for living well. Soundmindinvesting.org.
As a nurse, I primarily work with children who are abused and exploited in trafficking, and I frequently see very unfair situations. We must talk about the issue of abuse. We can't base our actions on fear. We have to be faith-informed in what we do.
The Dr. Nurse Mama Show. For more from Dr. Jessica Peck, tune in at 2 p.m. Central on American Family Radio or on the podcast page at afr.net.
We're grateful for support from Movement Mortgage, who provides residential home loans in all 50 states. Guided by a mission to love and value people and a goal to redefine the mortgage process, Movement seeks to help others achieve their financial goals. You can find out more at movement.com/faith. Movement Mortgage LLC supports Equal Housing Opportunity, NMLS number 39179. For licensing information, please visit nmlsconsumeraccess.org.
Have you ever wondered where your money goes when you deposit it in a bank? Christian Community Credit Union believes in helping advance God's kingdom through everyday financial transactions. For over 67 years, they have provided values-aligned banking solutions to thousands of Christians and ministries. Consider Christian Community Credit Union as your banking institution by visiting joinchristiancommunity.com. Membership eligibility required. Each account is insured up to $250,000. This institution is not federally insured.
Hey, great to have you with us today on Faith and Finance on American Family Radio. I'm Rob West. Hey, as we think about applying God's wisdom to our financial decisions, you know, one of the key issues that we have to consider is that season of life in retirement. You know, the world would offer a definition, an idea of retirement that I believe really is not in line with the scriptural perspective on retirement. You know, this idea of retiring at 65 and getting a check and retiring to a life of leisure is fairly modern concept. You know, we really don't see that modeled in scripture except in a very narrow instance around the Levitical priests. God's word really does not support the idea of retirement that we would see today. So as we think about it, here's a few perhaps retirement myths that I think you need to be aware of as you consider how you approach this season of life, recognizing that, well, we all need to be honoring God's call on our life throughout the whole of our life. It doesn't have an expiration, which would mean that we would retire to something and not from something. First of all, it's this idea in terms of a retirement myth that we should never stop being a part of God's workforce. We just change assignments as we age and our circumstances change. However, we have to still plan carefully for that time when our income may be reduced or fixed because we can no longer work. Another myth is that retirement is all about us. As believers, it's never all about us. Life, including how we live after we retire, is all about Christ and our service to Him. A third misunderstanding about retirement is that you have to accumulate as big a nest egg as possible. In fact, what's more important is to decide how much is enough and save for that and no more. Another retirement myth is that retirement planning is only for rich people. In fact, everyone should plan for the future. Psalm 90, verse 12 says, teach us to number our days that we may gain a heart of wisdom. Well, wisdom includes prudent planning and saving so that we're out of debt and free to serve the Lord as He calls us in our later years. Another myth is that you'll necessarily be in a lower tax bracket once you retire. While that may be true for some, as work income decreases, your retirement investment earnings could keep you in a higher bracket. And then a final retirement myth is that you can determine your future. Yes, you can make plans, but be careful not to presume, which means you say, I'll retire at such and such a date with this amount of money. My spouse and I will move here and do this or that. Well, James 4 warns against this. It says, you don't even know what will happen tomorrow. Instead, we ought to say, if it's the Lord's will, we will live and do this or that. You know, retirement may not be a big topic in the Bible, but we can still plan wisely for our later years. So whether you're getting ready to retire or still working and raising a family, make your plans. Be on your knees before the Lord, asking Him for wisdom as we submit everything that we have for His use and for His glory as well. Hopefully that's an encouragement to you today. Let's begin today in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Josephine, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call, and God bless you for what you're doing.
Thank you very much.
I am a believer, and I do pay my tithes. I pay it on the gross, not the net. And I have set aside some for in an annuity. I am now retired, and I do pay tithes off my retirement check that I get. And I'm wondering, being that I get a little stipend from my annuity, I've already paid on that, do I pay tithes again because I'm taking it out of my savings? Or
yeah.
Is,
Yes, ma'am. So, good question. What type of annuity is it? Is it a fixed annuity or variable?
It's fixed. Like, I had put money aside, several thousands of dollars, and I marry several hundred dollars a month to come off of that to go with my my retirement to make sure I have enough to cover everything, you know.
Yes. But in terms of the return on that annuity, is it offering you like a guaranteed rate of return, or is there a variable rate of return tied to a stock market index of some sort?
I would have to check that out, because all I know is that it was my savings, and now I'm drawing off of it out. Now, that's when I get the answer to that, then I'll know what I'm doing.
Yeah. 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 And so what you're trying to determine is, you know, how much of that is a return of principal versus how much is the rate of return? Because to your point, if you already tithed on that money before it went in, there's a portion that's coming back to you if you annuitize. I assume you had a period where you were putting money into the annuity, or it was either a lump sum or over time, and now you've annuitized it, and so they're sending you a monthly check. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. And so some portion of that monthly check is essentially a return of what you've already put in. And then there's a portion that would be representative of the gain that you would have on that over time. And that would be the portion that you'd want to tithe on. Now, one approach is kind of the simplified approach to say, I'm just going to see everything I receive as a gracious gift from the Lord, and I'm just going to continue to tithe on that increase. Another approach is to say, well, wait a minute, I have tithed on that. So even though I may give sacrificially beyond that for the, quote, tithe portion related to my income, you know, there is a portion that's coming back to me that is essentially money that I've already tithed on. And then there's another portion that would represent the gain. I would say, you know, you'd probably be safe to say that assuming that was a fixed annuity, you know, factoring somewhere around 70% of that being a return of the principal you'd already paid in, and maybe 30% being the increase, that would probably be a safe assumption. And then you could take 30% of that and then do another tithe on it, because, you know, that would be the gain portion. But that's ultimately what you would be looking for. Does that make sense, though?
Yes, it does.
Okay.
And
go ahead.
One quick one. I've been taught about first fruits, but I'm not sure. I've been told that you pay it the first month out of the year. You can either do a day's wage, a week's wage, or a month's wage. And then what is it for?
Yeah, well, first fruits is just this concept of giving the first or the best. And so we would see the Old Testament tithe coming under the law of Moses in a mostly agrarian society where there would be a tithe of the first fruits, the first of the harvest as it came in. And so I think if we want to apply the principle of the tithe, even though we're no longer under the law of Moses, we're under the law of Christ, if we want to continue to apply that principle to give on the first fruits, I think that would most clearly relate to that increase that God has given us, which today would not be for most the harvest coming in, but a paycheck, whether that's wages or earnings or a salary, or it could be something like Social Security or like you have with an annuity stream. Either of those, you could say, what is the increase? And then as I receive it, whether that's weekly or biweekly or monthly, then I'm going to give a first fruits tithe right off the top on the gross amount that's coming in as a way to honor the Lord, as an act of worship to say, God, this all belongs to you, and I'm going to return to you a tenth using the tithe as my model. But I'm not going to stop there, especially now that I've seen what you've done on the cross on my behalf. I want to give beyond that sacrificially as well. Thanks for your call. We'll be right back.
The American Family Association's mission is to inform, equip, and activate individuals to strengthen the moral foundations of our culture. Our goal is to be a leading organization in biblical worldview training for cultural transformation. We stand on the biblical truth that all human beings, including the unborn, are created in the image of God and are endowed by Him with the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
Thank you for standing with the American Family Association.
Healthcare is complicated. It doesn't have to be. If you don't love how your health insurance works, maybe it's time to leave traditional health insurance behind. Take charge of your healthcare with Christian Healthcare Ministries. CHM offers you flexibility. Enroll anytime. Choose your own provider and select the program that fits your needs and budget. CHM is the original faith-based way of taking care of your medical bill costs. Learn more at chministries.org/faithfi.
I'll do some stand-up comedy, Abe will do some preaching, Tim will MC the whole thing, and I'm really excited about it. The Weekend with AFA is a chance for our supporters to get better acquainted with the people and ministry you're supporting.
It's a Weekend with AFA, Thursday, October 2nd through Saturday, October 4th in Tupelo, Mississippi. Speakers will include Abraham Hamilton III, Jenna Ellis, Tim Barton, Tim Wildman, and more. Register at afa.net/weekend.
We're grateful for support from Eventide Investments on the Faith and Finance program. Eventide's approach to values-based investing is grounded in the belief that humankind was created in the image of God. with intrinsic dignity, value, and worth. Eventide calls this investing that makes the world rejoice. More information is available at eventideinvestments.com. That's eventideinvestments.com.
I'm Chelsea Wildman, Associate Director of the AFA Foundation. Occasionally, there are those that have a more complicated financial situation. If that's you, we would love to set up a phone consultation with our team and Rob West, host of Faith Fi on American Family Radio. We will go over your specific situation. If you are interested, please give us a call, 1-800-326-4543, extension 345, or you can visit us at afafoundation.net.
Are you a financial professional looking to grow your practice while offering advice that aligns with your Christian values? By becoming a certified Kingdom Advisor, you'll gain the biblical wisdom and professional credibility to serve clients who are seeking faith-based financial guidance. Each year, more than 75,000 people search for a certified Kingdom Advisor. Join our community and share your expertise with clients looking for someone who shares their faith and values. Start your journey today by going to kingdomadvisors.com/getcertified.
Hey, great to have you with us today on Faith and Finance on American Family Radio. I'm Rob West. So you want to tithe on your Social Security, but you've been tithing on the gross all of your working years. How much of that monthly benefit check is actually a return of principal, what you paid in, versus how much would represent the gain portion, depending upon two factors? One is when you started taking Social Security, what age? And secondly, what is your life expectancy? Because we have to just make some assumptions that you're going to live whatever the average life expectancy is, because if you live a lot less than that, a lot, you know, shorter period of time, that would affect it, or a lot longer would as well. And here's the answer. If you were to take it early, so let's say you take it as early as you possibly can at age 62, you would just consider, if you lived a normal life expectancy, that 100% of what you're receiving was a return of what you paid in, and really no gain. And so you would say, well, if I've tithed on a gross basis during my working years, then 100% of what I'm getting is just a return of principal, and therefore there would not be any gain portion. So does that mean you can't give on it? No, absolutely not. You could still give as much as you want. You can't outgive God. But I think from a math standpoint, that's really the way it would come down. At full retirement age, it would be 80-20. 80% would be return of principal. 20% would be considered the gain. And if you waited until fully age 70, it would be 70-30. 70% return of principal, 30% would be the gain. Because remember, you're getting a check considerably higher than you would be at 62. So hopefully that helps you just as you think about what would be roughly that portion that would be considered my increase. Now, again, you may decide to take the approach that every dollar I get, no matter what the source is and where it comes from and whether it represents money I paid in versus what is an increase, I'm just going to go ahead and give a tenth right off the top. And that's just going to be my beginning point. I'm going to give beyond that. That's great. But if you truly want to know that gain portion, that at least gives you some rules of thumb, kind of a broad brush approach to saying, what is that true increase? And it's either zero at 62, 30% at, or excuse me, 20% at age 67, or 20, let me try that again. Zero at 62, it would be 20% at full retirement age and 30% at age 70. I hope that helps. Let's go to West Palm Beach, Florida. Hi, Donna. How can I help?
Yes, good afternoon. Thank you so much. And I appreciate all the advice you give in God's name. Question, please, is a couple of days ago, you mentioned Christian Credit Community, and I looked into it, and the particular thing you mentioned was they offered an investment for $5,000 minimum at 5%.
Yeah.
However, it's only if you bank online, and I'm sorry, I don't bank online or shop online. I don't do anything online.
Yeah.
Can you recommend something else that would give me a good rate of return with the extra that I have?
Yes. Now, I will say, and the reason we are partnered with and Christian Community Credit Union is an underwriter is because, you know, we want offerings that represent all of your needs in financial services, but with a trusted organization that we know is going to share your Christian values. And so whether that's debt management with Christian credit counselors or investments with Eventide and Crossmark and others, or with Banking Solutions Christian Community Credit Union, we have a lot of confidence in them. Now, they do have a limited number of bank or credit union branches that you can walk into. And you're right, none in West Palm. I will say, though, and you may decide to go elsewhere, and that's completely fine, but they are a part of a co-op with brick and mortar credit unions. And so although you can't walk into a credit union with Christian Community Credit Union on the, you know, front of the building, you could walk into any of the branches physically that are a part of that co-op shared branch network. And so there's 5,600 shared branches through the co-op network where you could actually walk in physically and do business with somebody without having to do everything online. So, for instance, in West Palm Beach, if you were to do a search on CCCU's website, you'll find that Gold Coast Federal Credit Union and Navy Credit Federal Credit Union are both in that co-op network, which would allow you to walk in. Would that make a difference?
That would. I was just interested because of the rate of return on that particular thing you mentioned was 5%. And that, according to their website, was only online banking.
Well, yeah. I mean, unless I'm misunderstanding, I don't think you'd have any problem getting that. You'd open the account through them and make that deposit, and you'd get that rate of return. Most people do most of their banking either through their website or the app. But if you wanted to see somebody face to face or make a withdrawal or add money to it, you would be able to go into one of those shared branches through the co-op. So I think that's kind of the best of both worlds, where you're getting that great rate of return, but you also have the ability to walk in and do business face-to-face. So I might look into that as a next step. Unfortunately, you know, all of the options that I would recommend to you to be able to give you something competitive to that are going to be an online solution. I don't have a way that, you know, I could give you that would allow you to find true brick and mortar local options that would give you that kind of rate of return. Unfortunately, I think you'd have to just really do your research there in your area to find something competitive. And what you're going to find is most of the brick and mortar offerings are considerably less, just because they're having to pay for those brick and mortar operations. And so therefore, they're not able to give you as high a rate of return as the online solutions, just because they're able to pass all that savings onto you in the form of no fees and higher rates of return on deposits. Doesn't mean there aren't some local options that are truly local in your backyard that are offering, you know, something in that ballpark. You know, I just don't have anything to reference. So I might do this as a next step. Reach out to our friends at Christian Community Credit Union. You'll find them at joinchristiancommunity.com. You can get the phone number. See if that co-op network would meet your needs and still give you that rate of return. If not, I think your next step, if you truly want to do something that's local, would just be to start looking around in your area to see what you can find. We'll be right back.
We are grateful for support from Timothy Plan. Since 1994, Timothy Plan has shared good news with investors and advisors by offering faith-honoring mutual funds and exchange-traded funds. More information is at timothyplan.com. The investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses are contained in the prospectus and summary prospectus available at timothyplan.com. Mutual funds distributed by Timothy Partners Limited and ETFs distributed by Foreside Funds Services, LLC. Investing involves risks, including possible loss of principal.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
You look at three of the four justices there in Colorado that voted to remove him from the ballot. They all came from Ivy League schools, schools that had been created as divinity schools. What a picture of the apostasy in America when it comes to the church.
Stay informed with Tony Perkins and his guests on Washington Watch, weekdays at 4 p.m. Central on AFR, or catch up anytime with the podcast at AFR.net.
Faith and Finance is grateful for support from Sound Mind Investing. For more than 30 years, they've offered financial wisdom for living well. SMI provides step-by-step guidance for do-it-yourself investors, from those just getting started to those getting ready for retirement. More information, including a short video webinar on profit and peace of mind no matter what's happening in the market, is available at soundmindinvesting.org.
We work, we earn, we save. But is that all there is? The book of Ecclesiastes gives us an entirely new perspective on money that impacts our day-to-day lives. FaithFi's study, Wisdom Over Wealth, unpacks life-changing biblical truths about wealth, work, and contentment. This resource will help you grow in how you handle wealth by deepening your trust in God. Request your copy of the Wisdom Over Wealth study with your gift of $35 or more by going to faithfi.com/give.
When you hear this,
this is American Family News.
You know what follows is the truth. Your news from a Christian perspective.
Hundreds of teachers are going to have to walk into that school building and they are forced to swallow political ideology that in many cases violates their very faith and conscience.
If you miss it at the top of the hour, American Family News podcasts are available at AFN.net and sign up for our daily news brief at AFN.net.
Feeling burdened by credit card debt? As faithful stewards, we are called to manage our finances wisely. Christian credit counselors can help with a debt management program that allows you to pay off debt up to 80% faster, while honoring your commitments with integrity. Don't let debt hold you back from the life God has planned for you. Take the first step toward peace and financial freedom today. Visit ChristianCreditCounselors.org. That's ChristianCreditCounselors.org.
This is American Family Radio, a listener-supported ministry of the American Family Association.
I'm so thankful to have you with us today on Faith and Finance here on American Family Radio. You know, here at AFR, it's all about equipping you with a biblical worldview. First and foremost, to encourage you to surrender your lives to Jesus, to place your full trust in Him for your salvation. And then beyond that, which is the biggest decision you will ever make, it's all about stewardship. How can we be stewards of what God has entrusted to us? Our time, our relationships. We're stewards of God's Word and our talents and skills, and yes, His resources, the financial resources that have been entrusted to us. How do we live with a biblical worldview in every area of our lives, including this area of money, understanding the heart of God from Scripture and applying that to the everyday decisions we make with His money? That's what we want to do on this program to help you do just that. Let's go to the phones today. We're delighted to have Maria from Florida. Go right ahead.
Hi, Bob. Thanks for taking my call.
Yes, ma'am.
I have two children. One is in the autism spectrum, but he's high functioning and he has jobs, but he can't handle money. He just spends it all. So I was wondering, and I have a daughter who's not in the spectrum and she's very high functioning. I was wondering, can I leave a will so that when I pass away, my daughter can set up a trust for him? Instead of setting it up now, can I leave it to her to set it up and figure out how much money he needs a year and how to do that? Can I leave it up to?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, if everything is going to her and then ultimately she's going to pass it on to, is it your grandson? Is that right?
No, it's my son. They're both.
Oh, it
adults.
Is your son. Okay, got it. Yeah, I mean, I would think you would want to go ahead and do that now. I'm not an attorney, so this would be a great question for an attorney who specializes in these types of situations with special needs. And so I would go and do that now. My just kind of initial reaction would be you'd be better served to go ahead and do this. Because if, you know, your daughter were to pre-decease your son, or, you know, you want to just make sure that everything is in place, you know, I would think that, you know, it'd be good to go ahead and determine now, how much you want to go to each person. And then that special needs trust really is going to be the tool to protect his eligibility for government benefits while allowing him to have access to the assets he needs and that, you know, you're able to provide based on your financial situation. So it can hold homes and vehicles and real estate and investments and even various accounts like IRAs and Roth IRAs. And then it spells out how they'll be managed and distributed after your passing. There's no Medicaid clawback, so you know it. They're not subject to the payback provisions of Medicaid, which gives him later, you know, greater long-term financial security, and there's spending flexibility, so it can cover a wide range of expenses not covered by government programs. The only downside is that if it's used to pay for food or rent, the SSI benefit can be reduced, and that's where an ABLE account, A-B-L-E, can come in as a second tool alongside the special needs trust for certain expenses. But I think at the end of the day, I would encourage you, Maria, to go ahead and get that in place now.
I know, but lawyers are so expensive, and trust is so expensive. But I was going to leave half to her, half to him, but yeah. The half for him would be in a trust that she sets up for him.
Right, right. Yeah, and so I wouldn't want to speak to, you know, the potential downfalls of that. It could be that an attorney could look at that and say, yeah, there's no problem in waiting and letting her do that. It just seems to me that if you're going to go ahead and, you know, allocate half to him, getting that into the right vehicle to make sure that he's protected and that his benefits are protected if he's unable, to provide for himself down the road, would be better served now. But here's the thing. Let's just get that definitive answer. I would encourage you to go find a godly estate attorney, even if you don't go through with it, just to get some counsel, somebody who can advise you as to the pros and cons of now versus later before you make that decision.
Right. I have another question.
Yeah.
I have a Fidelity College savings account. It's not the 529. It's an investment. I forget what it's called now. And it was losing money, so I forgot about it. Now it's grown to $50,000. He's an adult. They say he has to take over the account. Is there any way I can bypass that so I can put it in a trust for him or something like that?
Yeah. And so this is just an account you earmarked for college. It doesn't sound like it's specifically a stated college savings account. Is that right?
It's not a 529 plan, but
So it could be the old education IRA or what they called Coverdale. Does that sound right?
No. Okay. No. I forget.
Well, you need to find out what that is. I think, again, this is going to come down to normally when he reaches the age of majority, depending on what type of account it is, it would be his to control. The only question would be now just his, you know, whether or not he's capable of doing that, and his medical, you know, incapacity may involve, you know, a change there where you could, you know, have somebody else step in and take responsibility for that. I think at the end of the day, you know, these are, again, legal matters that you really need to get some legal counsel on.
Right. Yeah. I see him having the best video game player in town.
Yeah. I understand. Well, listen, we'll ask the Lord to give you some wisdom. I know these are not easy to navigate, and yet I'm delighted to hear that you're a thoughtful mom trying to do the best thing you can for your son. And I think this is where the Bible encourages us to seek wise counsel. And I think that's going to be your best option here moving forward. Thank you for being on the program, Maria. Lord bless you in all of your endeavors. Let's go to Georgia. Hi, Missy. How can I help?
Hi. So, our daughter had several college loans that we took out for her. And we've been paying on them. Her last school year was like 2017. We've been paying on two loans all along, but one just showed up. Like, she received some notifications that she had a delinquent payment that just apparently started like 4 or 5 months ago. So I just was concerned if could that possibly be fraudulent. I don't understand why it would all of a sudden out of the blue show up. So trying to figure out how I could verify if that's legitimate or not, because people are so clever these days with how the false things come along,
Yeah. Well, it certainly could be fraud if no one authorized the loan. I'd ask your daughter if she applied for it, or if someone like a family member, or if there's, a former marriage involved, if, somebody had access to her information. If it's a Parent PLUS loan, it's to be in your name, so you'd see if the signature was forged. I think the first step for you is to verify the loan's existence. I'd pull credit reports from all three bureaus at annualcreditreport.com. Look for the loan in question. You can check her credit report, too. She'd have to authorize that, but she has one, even at her age. Check the lender. So I'd contact the lender or servicer on the loan. And, ask for the specifics. When was it opened? Who applied? What documentation they have, like a promissory note? If it's a federal student loan, log into studentaid.gov with her FSA ID and see if it's listed there. You can check with the school. Call the financial aid office. See if they have a record of the loan. I think those are your first steps to determining whether this is legit or not. And if you determine it is ID theft and fraud, then you want to take action with a police report. If it's legit, but it's unrecognized, you found out, your daughter took it out or somebody else did legally, then, you'd want to talk about it because, miscommunication can happen there. So I think those are your next steps, Missy. We appreciate your call today. Lord bless you. We'll be right back.
This weekend on The Stand Radio, we'll talk with attorney Aaron Smith of First Liberty Institute about the essential role of military chaplains and a new bill that would restore their own religious liberty.
And that's exactly what the Military Chaplains Act of 2025 is seeking to do, is to just re-up again. Hey, chaplains are important, and we need to take care of them and make sure that they are freed up to serve.
The Stand Radio, Saturdays at 4 and Sundays at 8 p.m. Central on AFR.
The Antichrist isn't going to appear at the beginning of the 7 years of tribulation as a baby. He will be a full-grown adult, already in a position of leadership. He will have lived upon the earth for some 30, 40, or 50 years before his appearance at the beginning of the tribulation. He may already be alive.
Join Dr. David Jeremiah for his series, Escape the Coming Night, next time on Turning Point.
5:30 a.m. and 7 p.m. Central on American Family Radio.
We're grateful for support from Guidestone, whose diversified suite of investment solutions align with Christian values to create positive change in the world. More information is available at GuidestoneFunds.com/faith. Investing involves risk, including potential loss of principal. Carefully consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of Guidestone Funds before investing. They're distributed by Foresight Funds Distributors, LLC, which is not an advisory affiliate, a registered investment advisor, nor do they provide investment advice.
Jesus said, where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Today, put your heart into something that makes an eternal impact. Heart for Lebanon is sharing the gospel and protecting girls from early marriage, child labor, and violence. Your gift of $114 helps reach 3 at-risk girls with hope and a brighter future. Give generously. Text FAITH to 98656. That's FAITH to 98656. Or visit faithfi.com/Lebanon.
I'm grateful to have you with us today on Faith and Finance here on American Family Radio. Sit back and enjoy. We're going to cover a lot of ground here in our final segment. We'll get to as many calls as we can. Let's go to Minnesota. Hi, Danny. Go ahead.
Hey, Rob. Hey, I got a question. I'm 62 years old. My wife and I are pretty much financially debt-free. A couple hundred dollars here on a credit card. But we're probably approaching the need of another vehicle. Let's say I go out and purchase one just for myself, with just my name on the account, $15,000, $20,000, let's say, and I pass away. My wife's name is not on the account. Who's left responsible to pay that debt? And would the debtor come and look for my wife, or would they just wipe it out? Or?
Yeah. So it would be your estate. And so depending upon, how that's treated in the state of Minnesota, and I don't know offhand, your estate is responsible for the debt. So, if you pass away and an asset is in your name, then your estate would have to settle all of your outstanding obligations and debts. So in the case of the car could be sold and then, that would pay the debt. And if that vehicle loan went unpaid, that lender would repossess the car. Now, the question would be if she wanted to keep the car and, just, you know, assume that obligation or sell it herself and get that paid. But typically, you know, she would be the executor of your estate and be then responsible for settling all of the debts that were outstanding. Now, if there's no assets there, then obviously, a debt could go unpaid if it's only in your name. But again, it does often come down to how various states treat marital property differently. And so that would ultimately be the determining factor. But I think in this case, because there's an asset there that's securing the loan, the estate clearly would have the ability to repay it, even if it had to be sold. Does that make sense?
Right. Would that theory be the same theory in terms of a credit card debt? Let's say I racked up a $10,000 credit card debt, and the same thing, I passed away before my wife, but my name is the only name on the credit card.
Yeah.
Approach that.
Yeah, good question. And so I think, you know, in that case with the credit card debt, it starts with whose name is on the account. If it's in your name only, your wife is not personally responsible unless she's a co-signer or a joint account holder, not authorized user, but co-signer or joint account holder, or you live in a community property state. And in that, those in these states, both the spouses can be responsible for debts incurred during the marriage, even if the debt is in one person's name only. I don't believe that's the case in Minnesota, but at the end of the day, that would be a legal matter that you'd have to get an attorney to weigh in on.
Great. All right. Well, thank you all for your time.
Absolutely, Danny. Thanks for your call, sir. We appreciate it. To Chicago. Hi, Teresa. Go ahead.
Hi. My question was, I received a few letters regarding a breach from some hospitals and clinics like that I went to where their system was compromised. And so people's identities were taken, I guess. So I was wondering if I do a credit freeze, because it is free, you know, the hospitals offer free credit freeze or, just free reporting to the credit bureaus. So I've been hearing a lot about title locks and how people are also stealing people's house titles, property titles, because titles are public information. And so I was wondering, would a credit freeze put up a red flag if somebody attempted to use that my identity to steal equity from my property or something, or steal my title or something?
Yeah, unfortunately, those are two different things. So a credit freeze restricts access to your credit report, which makes it more difficult for identity thieves to open new accounts in your name, because the lender that they're trying to get an account open can't access your credit report, and therefore it's going to shut it down. That doesn't affect your home's title from a fraudulent transfer or what's called a deed theft. Those are two separate things. The thing you would want to do there if you're concerned about it, and these are very rare, although you're right, they do happen, and it seems like, you know, more and more they are, is you'd want to sign up for a property alert. Some counties, and I think more and more now all the time, are providing free notification services that alert you when a document is recorded related to your property. And so this can provide early detection of a potential fraudulent activity. Beyond that, I would say, you know, just regularly monitor property records. You could periodically check your deed status through your county records office, and, you know, all of those are online now. But that credit freeze, although it's a valuable tool for preventing ID theft related to new credit accounts, is not going to prevent someone from fraudulently transferring your property's title.
Oh, wow. Okay. So thank you very much. I'll go ahead and do that. Check my property title. Yeah. Thank you.
I would say, you know, generally, again, this is a peace of mind issue. Generally, I don't recommend what they call title insurance, which is essentially, you know, trying to, help you be alerted if your title changes and they, you know, try to provide you some, you know, restitution. The problem is, at the end of the day, it's fraud. If somebody tries to foreclose on your property because they've fraudulently transferred your title and taken out a loan that went unpaid, and they try to foreclose on your home, they can't. Now, you'd have the legal hassle of defending yourself, but at the end of the day, it's fraud, so they're not going to be able to foreclose. So I just think that whole idea of title insurance is a misnomer. And, you know, I don't think it's worth the expense, especially when you can do some of this on your own, like, as I mentioned, the property alert. Teresa, thanks for your call today. It's a great question. To Ohio. Hi, Bob. How can I help?
If I was to get a reverse mortgage and say 2 years later you end up passing away, but you end up spending 6 months in the nursing home before that, can the nursing home come or... Okay, I missed something. If you if you get the reverse mortgage and you end up giving the money away, then you end up in a nursing home, and they can they come back and take that money that you gave away?
Yeah, it's a good question. So at the end of the day, first of all, if you have a reverse mortgage, what's called a home equity conversion mortgage, you know, if you permanently leave the home. And that's going to be, you know, being out of the home for 12 consecutive months in a healthcare facility, that loan is going to become due and payable. So the home would need to be sold to sell that property. Now, if you have a co-borrower like a spouse, as long as one borrower still lives in the home as their primary residence, it remains active. But at the end of the day, once you one or both of you, depending on if it's there's a co-borrower there, leave the home for a year or pass away or sell it, that reverse mortgage is going to need to be paid. Now, I don't know if you're talking about, you know, Medicaid. Is that what you're talking about?
Well, you go in a nursing home and you don't have the insurance to pay it, they're going to take everything you have.
Yeah, yeah. Well, so that's where...
Come back and take that money that you gave away. Or are they going to want that? So yeah, someone in your family and some charities.
Sure. Right. Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, that's going to be a legal matter. I wouldn't want to weigh into the nuances of that. There is something called the Medicaid clawback or Medicaid estate recovery. So, you know, absolutely that can come into play here. Because if you were to receive Medicaid long-term care services like a nursing home, the state's required by federal law to try to recover those costs from the person's estate after death, which is typically, from the home. And, you know, the home equity conversion mortgage allows you to borrow against your home equity. And then that loan becomes due when you die or sell the home or move out. And then if you pass away while Medicaid was covering your care and you still have that reverse mortgage, well, then your home is a part of your estate and Medicaid can file a claim against your estate for repayment. And, you know, the reverse mortgage lender would have to be repaid first using the home's value. But if there's any remaining equity, whatsoever, then Medicaid can claim it. So perhaps that's what you're, referring to there. But it's something to keep in mind. And obviously, we would want to pay our obligations. And, if we rely on Medicaid, but the assets are there, then that's the purpose of the state coming back and trying to make the federal government whole for their part in covering those expenses. I hope that helps to clear that up for you, Bob. We appreciate you calling today. Lord bless you. Let's see quickly to Ohio. Miriam, I have just about a minute left.
Hi. Yes, I'm calling because I have a $40,000 credit card and different credit card debt. Somebody offered me a personal loan at 8.9%, and I think they said it would take me between 3-4 years, somewhere around that line. I wasn't sure if that would be worth it or not, or try doing a snowballing.
Yeah, I mean, what kind of money do you have to service this? Do you have $1,100 a month, $1,000 to $2,000 a month you could put toward this?
You mean extra on top of my payments?
Yeah, well, I'm just saying anything you would do with $40,000 in 3 to 4 years is going to require a pretty hefty payment. But beside that, let me just talk about the bigger idea here. I would not do that, Miriam. You know, the challenge with a personal loan is it's personal. And, despite your best efforts, this can be really challenging and can create a strained relationship if you're unable to pay. What I would do on this is not try to snowball it yourself. There's just too much money owed. I'd go through our friends at Christian Credit Counselors. They can get that interest rate way down, perhaps even below 8.9, and you would pay through them every month. And we've had thousands of our listeners use them, and they're amazing. They're all believers. So just go to ChristianCreditCounselors.org, ChristianCreditCounselors.org. I would do that over the personal loan. Thanks for your call. Folks, grateful to have you along with us today. I'm thankful for my team today, Adam, Devin, and Jim. Couldn't do it without them. Have a great weekend. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.